May 1929, a new inmate arrived at Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia. Eastern State was no ordinary prison. It was the oldest in America, created by the Quakers, who believed that if a lawbreaker had time to contemplate his crimes, he might become penitent for his misdeeds. But this new inmate was no ordinary prisoner. He was the most famous gangster in America. He'd broken every rule of organized crime as it existed in the 1920s. He was flashy, charismatic, drew attention to himself, flaunted his crimes, and even dared to gun down his rivals while barely bothering to hide his involvement in their deaths. He turned a loose collection of gangs into a Chicago empire that owned or controlled breweries, distilleries, speakeasies, gambling houses, horse and dog tracks, nightclubs, brothels, labor unions, businesses, and much more. Together, these various legal and illegal enterprises produced an annual revenue in the hundreds of millions of dollars. As protection and enforcement for the organization, he controlled an army of sluggers, bombers, and gunmen, numbering between 700 and 1,000 men. Some were under his direct command, others were available through allied gang leaders. To keep himself from being arrested or prosecuted, he relied on a complicated connection with City Hall that involved a variety of officials that included aldermen, police officers, detectives, precinct captains, and even the mayor himself. That prisoner's name was Al Capone. And by May 1929, he was not yet 30 years old, although he looked much older. Countless plates of pasta and numerous bottles of wine had deposited layers of fat on his body, but under that fat was rock-hard muscle, and in anger, he could inflict brutal punishment. He stood 5 feet 10.5 inches tall and weighed 255 pounds. He walked with an assertive thrust to his upper body, his shoulders sloping like a bull's, and his large head sat on a neck so thick it could barely be distinguished from his torso. His hair was dark brown, his eyes light gray under thick eyebrows, his nose flat, his mouth wide and fat-lipped. A scar ran along his left cheek from ear to jaw, another across the jaw, and a third below his ear. Souvenirs, it was said, from a long-ago knife fight. He was embarrassed by his disfigurement. He often considered plastic surgery, but instead applied a layer of white talcum powder to his face, hoping to hide the paleness of the scars. To photographers, he consistently presented the right, unmarked profile. He hated the nickname given to him by the press, Scarface, and no one used it in his presence if they valued their life. He allowed his pals to call him Snorky, a slang word for elegance, but that was the only moniker anyone dared. Capone was not an attractive man, but he radiated power. He'd started as a street thug who worked his way into one of the most powerful positions in the American underworld by sheer force of will. Women desired him no matter what he looked like, and men wanted to befriend him because of his power, his wit, and his charm. Even those who wanted nothing more than to destroy him understood his universal appeal. Al Capone ran the city of Chicago. There was no question about that. He controlled the mayor, the police, the state's attorney's office, and almost every official in the city. Things in the Windy City didn't get done without the permission of Capone. At the height of his power, no one could touch him. Or so it seemed. Capone had been sentenced to spend a year behind bars at Eastern State. His arrival was widely reported in the press, but what wasn't so widely reported was that he'd brought someone else with him to the fearsome penitentiary. but it was someone that no one else seemed able to see. Late at night, after the lights had gone out, as Capone tossed and turned in his bed, a terrifying memory of what he'd done just a few months before came back to visit him. That memory's name was James Clark. It was while he was incarcerated at Eastern State that Capone first began to be haunted by the ghost of Jimmy Clark, one of the men killed during the infamous St. Valentine's Day massacre. In the darkest hours of the night, other inmates reported hearing the sound of Capone screaming in his cell, begging someone he called Jimmy to go away and leave him alone. No one had any idea what he was talking about. Capone was alone in his cell. Or was he? The Roaring Twenties, a decade best remembered for its gangsters, jazz, flappers, and prohibition booze, left a bloody stain on the history of Chicago with its speakeasies, Tommy gun shootouts, dirty cops, and the many ghosts those violent days left behind. And there was one man who personified this era of gangland Chicago more than any other, Al Capone. He rose to the highest levels of the criminal underworld when he was only 25 years old, becoming one of the wealthiest and most powerful men in America. But despite his nearly unlimited power, Capone was a man who lived in fear, not caused by the scores of his enemies, but from what he believed was a vengeful spirit left behind by the brutal St. Valentine's Day massacre in 1929. In Season 10 of the American Hauntings podcast, we'll be taking a trip back in time to the years of Prohibition, and through 24 episodes, we'll be telling the story of a city where the streets ran red with blood. It's a story that will be accompanied by the clink of bootleg liquor bottles, jazz music, and rattling machine guns, and it'll take you behind the scenes of the world of Big Jim Colosimo, John Torrio, the Terrible Guinness, Dino Banyan, Jaime Weiss, Bugs Moran, and many more. It's a season you've been asking for. So if you're ready for crime and corruption, deadly shootings, one-way rides, assassinations and suicides, and other blood-soaked events that left lingering ghosts behind, then we've got the episodes for you. So on behalf of myself, Troy Taylor, and my co-host, Cody Beck, we want to invite you to experience Season 10 of American Hauntings with us, a season we're calling Murder City. It's coming your way starting February 3rd, and you don't want to miss a single episode of what promises to be our bloodiest and most exciting season so far. We'll see you soon.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.